So in the unit 2, we will be covering mainly two aspects. The first part is the yoga ladder, that is different sequences of yoga that we have in Bhagavad Gita in the systematic progressive order. That is the first section, and the second section is about Jnana, about the knowledge aspect in chapter 3 to 6. So mainly focusing on 3, 4, 5 and 6. Now, in yoga ladder, what is the prime importance of yoga ladder? Can anyone tell? We look a little bit.
Gradual progression.
Yeah, exactly. That's a gradual progression. Towards what?
Krishna
consciousness. Or in terms of yoga, what do we call that?
Bhakti yoga.
Bhakti yoga, exactly. So it's a gradual progression towards bhakti yoga. So that is the whole aim of yoga ladder. That is, we will be discussing different yogas. You might have already, I know, you have already heard about different yogas. And I'm sure you have a fair understanding what are those yogas. What are the different yogas? Can anyone?
Karma
yoga.
Ashtanga yoga, bhakti yoga. So I'm sure you have some understanding about it. But now what we are trying to do is exactly where it is presented in Bhagavad Gita. And from the Bhagavad Gita point of view, what can we speak about it? And what are the process of different yoga? So today we will be looking at briefly into it. But it will not be, today it's not the yoga ladder class, but we will be looking into an overview of different yoga processes, different yoga systems. And culminating that in, ultimately in bhakti yoga. So that means that this section will show that, okay, bhakti yoga is the highest and how it is the highest. And with how we are progressing through different yoga ladder and ultimately coming to bhakti yoga. So that is very important. And next part in the jnana, we will be discussing what is Ishvara, what is Prakriti, and what is Ishvara and Prakriti, and then what is the next?
Jiva.
Jiva, exactly. Jiva. So these are all different aspects of knowledge. So that we will be analyzing in the upcoming session. So that is part of this unit as well. Now, particularly in today's session, first we will be going through the chapter 3, an overview of chapter 3. And the beginning part we have already discussed last time. You must be already knowing. What is the beginning of chapter 3? If you yourself can give some points. Beginning, what is the beginning? No, what is the beginning discussion? Oh, fact, there in prepared slides because we discussed already. We have discussed two times. Last time we did a little bit, and in our previous sessions in Unit 1, we had a full, pretty much good analysis of first 8-9 verses of third chapter. In the beginning, 8-9 verses. Which are they talking about? Renunciation of? Yeah, renunciation of work. Is it glorifying renunciation of work? So that everyone can go home and sit happily. No need to do anything more. We can have all meditating yogis or great renunciants. What is the aim? Okay, it talks about renunciation.
Work
and devotion. So is it glorifying renunciation as such?
No.
So it says which is better?
Work
and devotion is better, that's right. And it also presents what is not an ideal standard. Okay, we say work in renunciation is better. Okay, that is good. But what is a pretender? Who is a pretender? Who is not actually following this principle?
Who constantly renounces the work and but still dwelling in material desires.
Okay, good point. That is, in the mind, he is dwelling the mind in the material desires. And externally, he has renounced everything. Not exactly. No, that is in the second chapter, Matpara. That is the second chapter. Not exactly there. However, it's in the third chapter. So one can easily show an external. He can show an external symptoms of a renunciant. No, nice, maybe nice saffron clothes. Doesn't have any possession. But at the same time, if the whole meditation is about sense gratification, then Krishna calls such a person as pretender. So it is said, the terms used is very interesting. It is the fourth verse. Fourth verse? What is it?
Six.
Karmendriyani. Samyamya.
That is sixth verse.
Sixth verse? Okay. So that is Karmendriyani. Samyamya. What does that mean? Karmendriya and Samyamya.
The five working sense organs.
Yeah, that's Samyamya. What is Samyamya mean?
Controlling,
exactly. So the Karmendriya, externally, Karmendriya means the senses for action. So the leg and everything externally is Samyamya, is completely under control. But here Aste Manasa Smaran. Here Aste, one who be situated Manasa Smaran, in the mind, he is meditating on so many sense gratifications. Then such a person is known as Mithyachara. Mithyachara sa Uchyate. And just before, Krishna says, nobody can actually sit completely without any action. One is forced to act according to one's nature. Is it true?
Yes.
Ultimately one has to at least, you know, one has to breathe in and breathe out. One has to eat something. And if you eat something, one has to give up all the visarjan. That is, giving up all the waste products. One has to do these things. So we will see how even these activities can be used in Krishna service. That is one verse, particularly one verse in 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. 8 and 9. It actually talks about how the breathing process, how the excretion process, how eating, everything is in service of Krishna. A yogi how uses everything in service of Krishna. So that is a different aspect. Now, what is the qualification to renounce? We discussed already, so that's why I'm just revising. What is the qualification for renounce? Can we say that nobody can renounce his occupational duty? According to Varna and Ashram. Particularly according to Varna, for instance. Somebody is qualified to be an engineer, for instance. He is going to renounce his activity and going to full-time engage in devotional service.
Yes.
So what is the qualification for that?
Purity.
Yeah, purity of mind, yes. That's
it has to be
some amount of, you know, one needs according to one's purity, that's right. Purity of the heart. According to the purity of the heart, we can accept a renounced position. One can give up the activities according to one's position of renunciation. Otherwise, one cannot. And that too, in our order, renunciation, does that mean that we are going to sit and meditate for 24 hours? Say, in Krishna consciousness. If somebody is not working, does that mean that he can sit idly or he can just do bhajan? We discussed that one. You remember the bhajan anandi and goshti anandi. Are we bhajan anandis? How many people can sit and chant 1922 rounds a day? Is there anybody like that? I haven't seen. Maybe not in our capacity, but there can be devotees who are very advanced who could. But generally we can hardly finish 16 rounds. That too without sleeping and with proper quality, that will be an achievement. So focus on 16 rounds rather than focusing on 192 rounds. So who went to Japa retreat? So those who have, you have chanted 64 rounds. Was it easy? Difficult? So you can, was it, what's your experience? Who went? Okay, how was that? Little Prabhu?
Yeah, it was good.
It was good, of course. How many days can you do that? Once a year? Once in a year?
Yeah, when
Java retreat. So it is a good experience. But who can do every day? You are 64. We are not following in the footsteps of Haridas Thakur in terms of chanting. But there is an interesting conversation between Sanatan Goswami and Haridas Thakur. Even though Haridas Thakur was chanting 192 rounds, isn't it? 192 rounds almost. So, Sanatana Goswami said, you are actually the perfect example. You are the perfect example. So we think, okay, the perfect example because he has chanted 192 rounds. No. He said, you are the best example because in terms of your bhajan, in terms of your sadhana, you are chanting 192 rounds. Pretty much all the time you are chanting. At the same time, you are spreading the glories of the Lord also. You are preaching as well. So in both ways, Sanatana Goswami says, some people do their bhajan very nicely, but at the same time they don't preach. They don't act. And other people they can actually, they go out and preach, but actually they don't do their sadhana very well. So in both the terms, you are a perfect example, because you have preached. To whom Haridas Thakur has to preach? One example. Huh? Sorry? It's about Haridas Thakur. Yeah, prostitute is a good example. Who else? There is a very more famous. Okay, prostitute is an example. There is one more very famous example. Very, very famous example. Huh? One of the Goswamis. Now I am giving a big hint. He preached to one of the Goswamis. Anyone has a clue? Not Jiva Goswami. It's a good attempt, but it's not Jiva Goswami. Who are the Goswamis? Okay, tell me one Goswami name. Okay, one is Sanatan Goswami, one is Jiva Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami. Okay, very good. So you have no. The names are coming. So whom? Whom did Raghunath Das? Sorry, Haridas Thakur preach to? Yeah, I told. it was Raghunath Das Goswami. Yeah, so when he was young, he got the Raghunath Goswami got the association of Haridas Thakur. So that was the beginning actually of. So he heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from Raghunath Das Goswami, sorry, from Haridas Thakur. That is, when he grew up, he developed that spontaneous attraction for Mahaprabhu, and he wanted to join the pastime of Mahaprabhu. So he was, you know, it's like even though he was a rich kid. Very, very rich. Still, he wanted to give up everything and just wanted the association of Mahaprabhu. Because he got the association of Haridas Thakur in his early age. So he got the hankering to associate with Mahaprabhu and to be part of the pastimes of Mahaprabhu. So you can see, you know, so Sanatan Goswami says, hey, you are the best example. Because you are the best sadhaka and you are the best pracharak. In both sense, you are the best. So very interesting, the power of Haridas Thakur. So in that sense it's fine, but when we say Prabhu, enough, you know, you don't show us a Haridas Thakur means, you know, don't chant too much, you know, chant your rounds, but do some service also. Okay, we cannot give up one for the other. Yeah, we cannot give up one for the other, both are important. Because we are not so pure to be bhajanandis and to perfect our lives. We are not pure enough. We cannot do that. In this age it's not recommended. And it's not the mood of Srila Prabhupada, it's not the mood of Srila. Prabhu travels everywhere. As remember in the story, I heard when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, the devotees there, they won't allow Prabhupada to go to west. The Prabhupada, that contemporaries, you know, the Goswamis and in other, they say, you know, why do you have, you have come to Vrindavan? Usually people take vow to stay in Vrindavan. Once they reach Vrindavan, especially in the old days, they take a vow that I will not leave Vrindavan. I will just stay here and I will do my bhajan and I will die here. That is the whole purpose of coming to Vrindavan, because it is a spiritual world. Now I am here and I just want to do my bhajan and die. That's it. At the same time, Prabhupada wanted to go not just out of Vrindavan. Prabhupada was criticized just going to Delhi to print the books. So not only that, Prabhupada wanted to go to the west. And he wanted blessings of all the devotees. So, how he got the blessings of the devotees? He invited all the devotees who were there, so, you know, all the primary, you know, the main devotees, the principal devotees. So, Prabhupada gave the published copy of Bhagavatam, first volume to give, and asked, you bless this Bhagavatam. He handed him to everybody, you bless this Bhagavatam so that it can reach the Western world. So everyone was happy. Okay, finally the Bhagavatam, you know, in English, it is going to the Western world. They were happy. They were blessed Bhagavatam. Okay, let this go to the Western world. And after that, Prabhupada asked, now bless the person who is actually going to carry this Bhagavatam. So then, you know, they were pretty much obliged to bless Prasila Prabhupada also. So even though Prabhupada was a pure devotee, still he wanted blessings of the devotees. It's amazing, isn't it? He wanted blessings of the devotees. Even Dhruva Maharaj, before he was boarding the airplane which came from the Vaikuntha, from the spiritual world, he didn't just walk into the airplane. He actually ask for blessings of all the Vaishnavas. If you read Bhagavatam, you can see. First he asks blessings of the Vaishnavas. Please allow me to go. Please give me blessings so that I can go. Then he actually boarded the airplane to go to the spiritual world. Now coming back to the point. So in all respects, working devotion is recommended. So that is the initial part. And then, next part also we have already discussed, which is again very very important. That is, even in the beginning of the creation, some system has already been established in this world for the sake of prosperity and nourishment of the living beings. And what is that system? Not exactly. It's a reciprocal system, which involves some higher being and the living beings. Especially the humans and some higher beings. Yajna, that's right. The yajnas, the sacrifices, was established. So in the sacrifices, there are two parties. One is the performer, that is the human beings primarily. And who is accepting this sacrifice? Ultimately it is Vishnu, and before that, the demigod. So first, this is coming under karma kanda. So people are offering the sacrifices and the demigods are accepting sacrifices on the behalf of Vishnu, because he is the yabhuk. He is the yajnartho karmano nitra lokoyam karma bandhana. If you don't do duty, if you don't do our sacrifice, then people are ending up in karma bandhana. People are just actually bound by the activity itself. It's not liberating, rather it is binding. So in the world, most of the activities are binding. It cannot liberate us, since there is no sacrifice, there is no acceptance of the higher beings, which are the demigods, which are in charge of the material nature and which are, they are providing everything. The fire, Agni is providing fire. Surya is providing the heat and light. Vayu, so many demigods. Indra, Lakshmi Devi, it's not a demigod, I felt. Durga Devi, Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and then unlimited list, which very difficult to cover. So there are so many demigods, and they are actually, and we don't accept. Nowadays it's very difficult to accept even the demigods, existence of demigods. If one accepts Veda, then slowly comes under to the impression that okay, they are existing, and it takes some time to accept that the demigods are existing. And it will take some time to accept Krishna as the Supreme Lord also. So it's all foreign nowadays to understand these things. How many people can in the world, you know, if you go out and you know, you talk about Indra or Chandra or Brahma, who will accept? That's just, you know, out of the question. Even in the India, where there is some element of Vedic culture, if you speak about demigods, they consider it as a mythology ultimately. Unless and until if they are getting some direct benefit of their puja, some results are coming, then they might accept to some degree. It's just mythological. Who will accept that there are four heads and, you know, 100 million heads and trident and, you know, just a folklore maybe. And ultimate sacrifice is sacrifice to Vishnu. He is the source. Now we are actually moving to the third section. And we also discussed how can Arjun argument that if I go to the forest, then I don't have to perform any sacrifice. If Arjun could argue in that way, or if that argument is there in Arjun's mind, how we can refute? That we discussed last week. How can we refute that argument? If Arjun says, I'm going to the forest, so why should I do all the sacrifice? Why should I do my prescribed duty? Okay, if somebody is living in a city or living in a country, then you have to do all this kind of thing. But if I'm going to the forest, then I'm not in the purview of any of these things. So why should I do my prescribed duty? I don't have to fight, I can just go to the forest. So what was the strong argument against this? Exactly. Still he is under the influence. His needs are being satisfied by different demigods, then if he still he has to perform sacrifice. Otherwise, he says Tena Evacha. Tena means he's a thief, plain language, thief. The honesty among thieves. You know that story? Honesty among thieves? Prabhupada says, in the Calcutta, some thieves are being very honest. After stealing everything, in among themselves they are being in a nice position. They are okay, they are dividing equally. Then it is a fair game. So this is called honesty among the thieves. Because after stealing they are already thieves. Then what is the value of honesty among the thieves? So the current society is honesty among people say about the fair go, you know, things have to be equally divided, you know, everything is fair, everything has everyone has their own right, human right, animal right, many rights are there. But these rights are on the purview of thieves. This is the adjustment among the thieves. Because first of all they are not acknowledging the Supreme Lord or any of the higher beings. Now, what is the question of honesty? What is the meaning of honesty among thieves? It is like, it was Prabhupada and Brahmananda Prabhu or Krishnananda, I don't know, one of them, one of those Prabhu's initial disciples, when they went to Calcutta, you know, there was a big Durga festival going on. So Prabhupada's disciple got a bit bewildered because so far he has heard about only Krishna and a little bit about demigods. But here the whole worship, everything is going on for Durga. So first asked Prabhupada, why is it that the whole worship of Krishna is going on? Prabhupada said, no, it's not worship of Krishna, it's worship of Durga. So he was bewildered. How can such a big ceremony for Durga, who is a demigod? Then he asked Prabhupada, is it better to be a Christian, you know, not knowing, or Muslim, not knowing about Krishna or demigods, and worshipping a god, or worshipping Durga? Which is better? Prabhupada said, it is better to worship Durga. Why? Because at least one is accepting the Vedic authority. At least 1%. So there is a hope that eventually one can come to understand about Krishna in that sense. I remember yesterday's Bhagavatam lecture. Anyone was there for yesterday's Bhagavatam lecture? Anyone? I was there. Yesterday's Bhagavatam lecture, Prabhu made a similar point. You remember? That is, if there is even kind of atheistic philosophy within the Vedic system, like Sankhya, which is analyzing the material elements, and Nyaya, which doesn't directly talk about the Supreme Lord, that also touches upon the spirit soul most of it. Well, the advantage is if one accepts that, at least there is a hope that eventually one will come to Krishna consciousness, because they will understand, okay, there is something more. In other words, it can actually build a bit of curiosity in the seeker in such a way that he can gradually elevate to higher understanding. So if it is completely away from the purview of the Vedas, then there is a higher chance that one would sink. It can just go down. So that is the advantage of being coming at least in the Vedic view, so that at least there is a chance of progress. Maybe gradual, but there is a chance. And at this point, we don't recommend a gradual progress, because the environment is not so conducive for gradual progression, as we know, we discussed regarding Varnashram also. Varnashram, how long can it last? How many births as a Brahmana to come to, you know, as a Vaishudra, many births, and after that Vaishya, many births, as a Kshatriya, then a Brahmana, if you are actually following the Varnashram, if you are actually gradually progressing from a lower order to a higher order, how many births to perfect one and go to the next? We don't have so many lifetimes. Even our golden period in Sankirtan Yajna, that is how many years? 10,000. If you consider 60 or 70 as the average age, then how many births we have? Maybe 100, 150? Is it right? Do you understand the analysis I am telling about? If you are considering 60 or 70 age, then maybe 150 births to perfect, to come to bhakti. Then also again one has to do bhakti. So we say, don't worry about this gradual progression, you just come to bhakti. So just start the bhakti straight away. So that is our process. Even though we will be studying, or we are studying yoga processes, and we are studying yoga ladder, our conclusion is why bhakti is supreme and why we can directly practice bhakti. That's all. We don't say, okay, now okay, we have studied the yoga ladder, so we should start from the beginning of the ladder. Start from the first rung. Okay, we'll start karmakanda. Now we'll start demigod worship. Where is the yajna-kund? Where is the fire? Where is demigods? We don't ask these questions. We just straight go to Krishna. That's it. Now, in karma yoga, the initial statement is, for a self-realized person, there is no duty whatsoever. 1617, there is no duty for a self-realized person. still he is performing his duty. Can you understand? A self-realized person, he doesn't have any duty, still he is happy to do his duty. Why? To set example for rest of the society. And examples are given of King Janaka, who is the father of Mother Sita, and the Lord himself. Did Krishna perform his duties?
Yes.
What he did? Okay, that's a good point. He used to rise early in the morning. So we have to get up early in the morning. What time is the Brahma Muhurta?
2 hours.
At least according to us, what do we follow pretty much?
Meditating.
Yeah, Krishna is following, so we have to follow Krishna in that sense. Krishna is getting up early in the morning, and we also have to get up early in the morning. Then, after that, what he used to do?
Meditating.
Before meditation. Yeah, he used to take bath and all the purificatory processes he used to do. And then he used to meditate on himself. So whom do we have to meditate on?
Krishna.
No confusion. That's why we shouldn't get confused. We shouldn't meditate on ourselves. A materialist is meditating on himself. Is it correct? We can think about ourselves for a few years back, or a few months back, when we were not practicing Krishna consciousness. Then we were, now also we meditate on ourselves, but there is a bit of a change. But before, it was full meditation on ourselves. After getting up, what am I going to wear today? What will people think about me? What is the hair cream?
Just write down the name. Because according to the numerology, they have to change the alphabet. So for them, just write down how many times every day.
Oh, really? that is the news for me. Really?
Some people say, on sign on, then leave the book, hand over the book to the side.
Okay. So that is meditation on oneself. So instead of that, we meditate on Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. Hopefully we are hearing, so it's the proper meditation on Krishna. It's called in here. Otherwise we are meditating on so many things while chanting. So Krishna performed his duties. Then he had his prescribed duty. Dwaraka, what was his prescribed duty? So he used to go to his court, his assembly. Swadharma, what is Swadharma? Sudharma, what is
Sudharma?
Sudharma. Okay. So he used to go to the assembly. How many Krishnas used to go?
One.
Only one. But how many Krishnas used to be there?
6 and 8.
They used to combine as one and go to his assembly. And he used to have his assembly in the evening or whatever time. Then he used to come back. So it's just like, looks like exactly like a working man in this world, isn't it? For us it is a struggle. We are not 16,108. We are just one person. And we may not have, a chariot may not be there, but at least a tram is there, 112. Or if you are in the suburb, a car or a Connex train is there. So somehow they hop into the train or car or whatever. And we go to our job, and evening we do come back. And let's spend time with the family, if there is a family. Like that. So, Krishna is setting a very good example. But does Krishna follow all these principles all the time? Sometimes he doesn't. We also don't sometimes, isn't it? But in that we cannot follow. We cannot follow whatever Krishna does. It is said Krishna has how many wives? 16,100. At the same time, we cannot even have more than one. So that is violation of the rules. If we do have, that is violation of the rules. It is said if somebody wants to follow these things, okay, one wife more than like Krishna. First it is said, Shastra says, first one should lift Govardhan. One should first lift Govardhan. And if you want to drink intoxication, if you want to be intoxicated, because Lord Shiva is another Vaishnavanam Yathachambhu, is another authority. If you want to follow Shiva in terms of intoxicating, then first you have to drink poison. Because Shiva drank poison. Did he die? No. He saved so many living entities by drinking poison. So if you can drink poison, then you can actually intoxicate. But you didn't die. If you are still alive, then you can intoxicate. Poison means, that is said, it was an ocean of poison. But he actually combined, the whole poison was combined into one drop. And then he is swallowed. And it came here and it stuck here. And the color of Lord Shiva's throat became
blue.
Yeah. So he is known as Neelakantha.
Neelakantha.
That's the reason he became Neelakantha. So first you become Neelakantha or a dead body, and after that you can intoxicate. This is the qualification given in Shastra. If you want to actually follow in this way, either Krishna or Lord Shiva. So it's not recommended. So we have to follow in the right way. And why does Krishna act in a way that is unsuitable for others, or which one cannot actually follow?
He wants to reestablish
those. Just to show that he is not bound by
this. Just to show that he is not bound.
Okay, that's a good point. He wants to show that he is not bound by any of these rules. Even though he is the creator of the rule, even though he wants everyone else to follow the rule, but he himself is not bound by anything. Name karmani limpanti. And karma is not, I am not affected by karma, Krishna says. Name karma phalaspruha. The karma phalas, the result of the activities, it doesn't affect me. Krishna is beyond that because he is the creator. He can change anything. He is not affected by the rules. No, he never.
Why Krishna is asking Shiva to use the poison?
Why did Krishna ask him to take the poison? My understanding is in that context, Lord Shiva is the very, very compassionate towards the living entities because he is the greatest of the Vaishnavas. Bhagavan says Vaishnava Nandita Shampu. So Krishna asked, that part was there, but at the same time he wanted to, if otherwise the old living entities was going to be ruined, going to be dead. So he was actually demonstrating his compassionate nature. So Krishna was actually showing the compassionate nature of Lord Shiva through this particular action. So he took, but he was not affected by any of these things. And he could protect all the living entities from the so much of force. Huge, an ocean of force. Now, when we deal with materialistic people, when we deal with karmis, so-called karmis, people are doing so many kinds of nonsense activities. And Krishna is giving a technique, an approach to reach them. So what is that principle Krishna says? If this comes as a very important point in this section. That is, okay, people have so many propensities, and their propensities they are using in so many different ways. Some people are going for gambling. Some people are, eating meat. Some people are working very hard from morning till night. Some people are creating disturbance to others. So many people are doing one or the other thing all the time. Not necessarily these things are Krishna conscious. So people are acting ignorantly. Then what is the advice for the devotees in dealing with them? Encourage the same activity. Somebody is intoxicating, okay, keep going. No.
Don't stop them from that particular activity, but just give them, maybe they can sense some more. Just inspire them.
Give
them
the prasad.
Give them a higher taste.
Yeah, give a higher taste. Slowly, yeah, that's the point. We have to deviate them, in the sense, one has to dovetail to Krishna consciousness. So the aim is not just stop all the activities. If you say somebody is like watching movies, it's not a prescribed item of devotional service. I'm saying non-Krishna conscious movies, not Prabhupada movies. It's not, we can see ourselves. We had strong tendency in watching movies. Who had that tendency? We all had strong tendency, we like to watch movies. So, and when we come to Krishna consciousness, we understand it's a waste of time. Is it right? We understand it's a waste of time. Practically it's a waste of time. And people at the mind is getting agitated, seeing the fight scene and love scene and this scene and that. The mind is just going up and down, the sine wave, that's the whole purpose of the movie. Create an emotional...
agitated.
Yeah, it has to create some emotional impact. So, at the same time, how we actually stopped watching movies, if we have stopped. Otherwise, in the future, you know, prospects, we could. How? If we tell somebody, you know, from tomorrow, bro, no more watching movies. Can anyone, has ever worked that way? Does it work for you and for ourselves? Does it work like that? Slowly, when we get engaged in the activities of Krishna consciousness, then slowly those things goes away. So even when we say, even if it is a nonsense, if you just stop, it doesn't really work. So that is the reason Krishna says, even when we are dealing with non-devotees, directly we are dealing with the non-devotees. So for them, it is said, just dovetail their activities moving towards Krishna consciousness. Very important. Slowly. We cannot stop their activities straight, cut. What you are doing, everything is Maya, now stop. Then they have nothing to do. Because everything is Maya. Whatever they are doing is pretty much, you know, abominable. So what will they do? Can, you know, then it comes to the initial part of in the third chapter beginning. That is, they have something, everyone has to act something. So what will they do? Again, they will be forced to act in the same way. So Krishna is saying, slowly dovetail their activities. So encourage them, okay, don't stop straight away, but engage them in devotional service gradually. So that they can come to now, Krishna is telling, who is the actual doer? So this doer is a very, doer means who is actually doing this activity. The whole world, so many activities, we are talking about karma, isn't it? Karma yoga. The whole world, so much of activities are going on, we are also doing so many activities, we go outside, so many activities are going on. The big city, things are moving all the time. So who is the real doer? Who is the real doer? Yes.
More some material nature.
Is it an information for us? It's not, we are not the doer, but modes are the doer. Prakrute kriyamanani gune karmani sarvachaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyade. But one who is influenced by the mode, one who is ignorant, what he thinks, who is the doer? Karta aham iti manyade. I am the doer. But the activities are being carried out by the three modes of material nature. Can anyone explain this? How does it make any sense? Huh? We think that we are performing the activities, or we meet one who is affected by the mode of ignorance. One who is in ignorance think that I am the doer of the activity. Whereas it is being actually carried out by the three modes of material nature. Does it make any sense?
It does.
Okay, that's a good point. That's a big step. That's a big step.
We desire.
Hey, suppose, you know, I can. Who's the doer? Now we can say, who's the doer? Everything, all the activities are being carried out by the modes of material nature. How can we understand? Okay, that Prabhu said a very good point. If you realize that we are not about it, what does that mean? So all the activities are being carried out by soul?
Soul
influenced by the modes of material nature. Okay, but try to understand this point. When we say the doer is the modes, how can we understand this? This verse is just saying all the activities are being carried out by the three modes of material nature. And first of all, which are the three modes of material nature? The mode of ignorance, passion and goodness. Okay. How are they performing all the activities?
They facilitate.
We desire according to our modes, according to the modes we are influenced by.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we use our free will in doing those things. So, in that sense.
No. Okay, coming back to Prabhuji's point. From Prabhuji's point, how can you understand? That's a good point. So, that is the beginning point, actually. We are the spirit soul. That's the beginning point. If you want to understand this, to break this, so first we have to understand we are not the body, we are the soul. So then, if I am hitting on your head, how can you understand it's not done by me, but the modes of material nature?
Conditioning by the modes.
No.
Because our body is physically, we are going, body is, we are moving physically, body part not, so we are separate from the body.
Okay, this is coming close to that point. Yeah, okay, Prasad Prabhu, very good. You are coming close to that point.
So,
body is given by nature, so body is covered by the... Yeah, body is given. So, if you are using our body, what is actually functioning? Now my question is, does the spirit soul, what is the nature of the spirit soul? It is either matter or spirit? It is spirit. Can the spirit soul directly hit your material body? Or if I think, if the spirit soul is actually hitting this? Is the intelligence hitting this?
It takes the help of the body.
Okay.
The consciousness. The condition.
What do you think? Tell the group.
Is the body that you acquire, depending on the modes of material nature, influences you to do that activity? Like, if you are getting a body of a female, leads to, which is more of ignorance.
Yeah.
So you are in that mode because of your consciousness, level of consciousness at the time of leaving the body.
Mm.
So you are in that particular mode. So modes are basically enforced upon you and force you to act in that particular way depending on the body you've got.
That means you are situated in that.
One simple way is to understand
is the person can be situated in different modes at one time.
All the time.
Can be situated in mode of goodness, mode of ignorance, and mode of passion.
Or the combination.
All the combination.
So unlimited variety.
It can be unlimited variety.
Can be more on goodness and more
The simple point is the spirit soul cannot actually act in the material world by himself. Because spirit soul is spirit soul. Because spirit soul directly it is not, it remains spirit, it's not affected. The spirit soul ultimately is never affected by the modes. Okay, the desire part is there, but otherwise the spirit soul, you cannot pollute the spirit soul himself. You can't do that. Because it is spiritual and it is there. It is the covering aspect is there, but the spirit soul himself is not affected. Slightly a point in the Brahma statement is reported in the appropriate chapter. The spirit soul is never separate from Krishna in that sense. He is always there. He is always spiritual. Though the covering aspect is there, the covering is there, but he is unpolluted. You cannot touch the spirit soul. So all the activities in the material realm is acting according to the three modes of material nature. Of course, as the mode in which we are, we can develop a particular desire, and we have the ability to provide the desire, we have the ability to come up with any kind of desires. But at the same time, that desire is being executed by the material body, by the material mind, that is completely under the mode of material nature. Everything else is in material nature. The mind is material. It's a product of the material nature. The body is a product of the material nature. The material intelligence is a product of the material nature. And whatever interactions are happening in this world, that is also interactions of the three modes of material nature. Even though we are spirit soul, whatever happening, everything is interaction of the material nature. Whatever we are perceiving, what are they? It is the influence of the material nature. Are we seeing anything else? Of course, again, spiritual things are there, but generally, What are we seeing? What are we perceiving? Everything is material. It's the interaction of the matter. Material nature is acting. Now, in the fifth chapter, actually, we will see a further analysis on the doer. I'm not getting into it now. It's just a little bit thought about it.
If we just take an example, this same example.
Yes.
Material nature can facilitate us.
Yes.
It gives us the facility, but it's my freedom whether I act in that particular situation or how will I act in that particular situation.
But the point is, you don't have any ability to act. You have the ability to desire. But do you have any ability to act?
It's there, free will is there.
No, free will is there.
If I take an example
Still, if it's not facilitated by the material nature, can you act? Can as a spirit soul, can you act?
It's a little like you're driving a truck.
Yeah.
You're sitting in a truck, and you can't get out and push the truck.
You don't have the strength to push the truck.
Yeah.
Then it's not in your capacity to
that's
drive this material.
Yeah, that's what my point
is.
All
you can do is push these few little levers
yeah.
in the car, but you can't actually drive the car.
That's my point.
It's the engine that pushes it.
Definitely,
along.
That's my point. Is taking an example of low pass example, like
mm-hmm.
if you are sitting in an airplane. Okay, fine. The material nature has given me the facility to sit in the airplane.
Yes.
I'm sitting in an airplane, and now it's my free will. Whatever I'm doing in that particular airplane, it's my free will.
Yes, that's right.
I can act in any way in that free will.
Okay.
In that airplane.
Okay.
Similarly, if you correlate
the action of the spirit soul, in that case, what is the action of the spirit soul? What's the action of the spirit soul?
Sitting in the airplane.
No, one more thing is that we discussed. What is it?
Desire.
To desire. So that is the only action. It's not actually action, but it is to desire. Only desire. Okay?
If I just use the same example, and Prabhupada finishes. Which my free will, whether I want to drink the coffee or want to watch a TV.
Yeah, true.
I'm acting in that way. I'm acting. And there is no material modes over there who is forcing me to act in that way. It's my free will. It's my free will. I will switch on the TV. It's my free will.
But how can you do that? How can you do that without a material nature? First of all, if you want to drink a coffee or water, both are material, both are made of material nature. Your mouth is made of material nature. Yes. Drinking hand is material nature. The drinking part, that is material nature. Yes. So where is your activity? Who is facilitating the activity? Fully. Who is facilitating? Okay, you are desiring.
Yeah,
but after desire, what is the rest? Who is doing the rest? Is it correct? Is it a valid
yes.
point?
Okay.
Who is doing the rest? Yes.
I want to ask Pranay Swami, what is the influence of free will and the three modes of material
yeah.
nature?
Yeah.
And he said, it's like, in the mode of ignorance, it's like you have your free will is constrained.
Mm.
You have a choice of drinking beer or wine. You know?
Yeah.
But it's not that you can choose to drink water and not drink beer.
Mm.
you have to drink some alcohol based on the modes of material nature.
Yeah.
That's your nature you've been given. But you can choose whether you drink wine or beer or spirits. Now, if you're going to drink whiskey, or beer, and you start drinking beer instead of whiskey, then you're going to get having less intoxication, and slowly you'll be able to get to start drinking light beer, and eventually you can give up beer altogether. So you can, based on your choices, you can slowly get out of it, but it's still a choice of which alcoholic beverage you have. In the mode of passion, you have more choice. There's less constraints. So you're still constrained, and you're what you can choose from is different now, you know, but still, you're constrained. And the mode of goodness is when you start getting a lot more choice. You can choose to drink beer, you can choose not to drink beer. You can choose to, you know, you can choose to elevate yourself spiritually, engage in spiritual life, which you can't really choose to do very much in the mode of ignorance. So you've now got so much more choice of what you want to do. But in the mode of ignorance, but practically, you have got free will, but not very much.
Okay,
right.
Like there are two modes of material nature.
Mm.
According to desire, like what we desire, in that other desire, like that takes us in like that mode of nature, like if we desire somewhere, it means in mode of ignorance.
Mm.
But that leads to that activity that you told before with quiet reason.
Mm.
Like if we desire, drink coffee and this thing, intoxication.
Mm.
So according to that, our mentality and our thoughts, mind will go for it. So it leads to this nonsense activity.
Yeah, if you are influenced by the mode of ignorance, if the desire and if we act, it will further put in the same mode, if we perpetuate our existence as in ignorance.
The question is,
mm.
is it our desire that puts us in a particular mode of nature, or it's the particular mode of nature that makes us desire something?
Exactly. We develop the desire according to the mode which we are affected. Now,
the
desire, we get a particular kind of desire according to the mode.
For example, last year, in Hudson River, the flight of the pilot was landed in the Hudson River.
Mm-hmm.
150 people, each of 150 people, you know that, 150 people were saved by the pilot, the American pilot. So at the time, everyone is everyone in praying, oh my God, they want the 150 people, they want that amount of goodness at the same time. Because they are desire to escape or anything. That's the desire.
So, wait, it's not finished. My answer is not finished. So, according to our activities from previous lifetime primarily, we are influenced now by a particular kind of mode of material nature. Our body is influenced by a particular kind of mode of nature. Can you understand that point? That is from our previous life, what we had, that reflection on that we can see now. That's why we are influenced by everyone's body is influenced by a particular mode of nature. From human one thing, maybe animal another thing. And in that mode, one can develop a particular kind of desire. Yeah, okay, it's not finished. Then, if you want to go further, still, even in that, we have the free will as well. Free will is still there. Free will is there. Even if one is influenced by many modes, still one can use one's free will. There are quite a few famous examples, even Maharaj is telling one. Explaining karma. Even the karma places us in a particular mode of material nature, but still one has the free will to go out from them. So that's the reason, you know, there is a famous story of a prince. It's a nice story, it's a simple story. That is, one twins were there, his both father, he was a drunkard, a heavy drunkard. One became a big doctor. And he started helping the community. And the other became a heavy drunk. Okay? So it was asked, both were interviewed and asked, why you became a drunkard like this? He said, you know, my father was a big drunkard and you know, had what else I could become?
I followed, what else I could become.
And the other one said, you know, my father was such a big drunkard and he was such a nonsense person, so I wanted to do something else. So that reason I became a doctor. So pretty much the twins are pretty much in the similar circumstances. The externals are pretty much same, the influences are pretty much same, but the free choice is there.
It's a path activity. So
which one?
According to the path activity, the one who became a doctor.
Could be, but generally it is given as an example to give a free choice. Even the same environment, one has chosen in a different way. Now, this is the doer is not completed. Doer thing we will discuss in the fifth chapter. This is just a show a little bit. But is it clear for you something? No, I don't think so. You want to discuss further?
We will discuss
again. Because the actual doer is not the doer. Then the question arises. Why are we responsible for our activities if everything is done by the modes of material nature? Finally, you have to suffer. Not the modes of material nature. If you don't find the animals are not for the modes of material nature, but it's for you. So why are we held responsible if everything is done by modes of material nature? So then the principle comes. We are actually the desiring part, or we are the prompting. We are actually the person to actually start the process. Then the modes of material nature facilitates. In terms of the mind, in terms of the body, in terms of our action, you understand? Everything.
Yeah.
It is facilitated by the modes of material nature, but still we are responsible.
But just now you told that it's the modes of nature that have to be
done. Yeah? It's true. That is also true.
But now you're saying that it's because of...
That's a good question. I like that question.
This would be covered by three modes of material nature, or maybe one or two or mixed.
What do you think?
I actually asked from the thing also. I said, we are all mixed up.
Yeah, true.
Because when we get up in the morning, suddenly we are in the pure.
In the morning, get up, who is jumping out from the bed? You know, where is the chanting beat?
That is what you say.
No.
So basically, you are comfortable.
So, which is first, chicken or egg? That's your question, Prabhuji's question. Which is the beginning? What do you say? Which is the beginning? No. Which is the beginning? There is an answer. There is a definite answer for that question. Ultimately, what's the beginning? Say, for instance, I'll tell you. If you place your question, why are we under a particular mode? Why?
Because we want to.
why we get a pig body or why we get a human body?
Because of our previous.
What is that?
Because we
can't enter
the world.
We'll go one by one. So, in previous day, suppose we are in a particular mode of goodness or mode of passion. Previously, we acted in certain way. And due to that, we are placed in a particular mode of material nature now. Okay, then, why in the previous life we were in a particular mode of material nature? Why we were influenced by a particular mode of nature? Because previously we can be a combination of many things. But we acted and we decided previously. So ultimately where it comes to? Ultimately, where are we from? Are you from Bombay? Delhi?
No.
Where are we from?
Golokrutam.
So, is there any modes of material nature just straight away there?
No.
So, what did you do? What went wrong ultimately? Free will. Yeah. So, there we started. Can you understand? So, that is the beginning point. The free will is the beginning point. And from there, we are now here. We are trying to go back. Can you
briefly explain that you were thinking? Can you briefly explain that doer thing again?
What is that?
Doer.
Which one? What do you want to know?
Whatever we discussed right now, can you please explain that? Because it's all complicated.
It is complicated.
So much ambiguity in the statement, whatever you're saying. You said before and now you're changing the statement.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The first point
of my economics is that in nature diversion, it talks about five things in this simple activity.
That's right, yeah.
And then you've got the seeds, and you get simplicity, and you get suffering. One of those points is beta, or the tendency to see again.
True.
So, and that is basically desire.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So, when we're talking about what our desires are, that is a simple activity from our previous birth.
True.
So we say, why is the material energy, they're the ones causing us to desire, but it's the simple, desire is a simple activity, a simple reaction. So, it's a simple reaction from what we did before, and that's a simple reaction to what we did before.
Yeah. Anyway, that doesn't, I don't think, you clarify Prabhuji. So, what you will do, you want to take Bhagavad Gita, and you can go to 327. We'll go step by step. You want to read the translation? I don't know. Okay. It's a very important verse. I believe you have to remember this verse. It's a verse for memorization. I hope so. It's very important. Okay. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. That itself clears, I think, pretty much everything. Vijay Prabhu, what do you think?
Yeah.
Things are getting clear? Okay, if you read further, it will be very clear. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. Okay. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nascence. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is the creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. Okay, the body is the creation of material nature. Mind is a creation of material nature. Okay, of course, under the supervision of Krishna. That is a very important point that we covered in the fifth chapter. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality Godhead is known as Hrishikesha, the master of senses, or the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses in sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. Is reasonably clear? And not only that, even there is a demigod also in charge of each part of our body. What can you speak about further? So even if you want to move our eyebrow, it's not just, you know, we think we can just move our eyebrow. No. The demigod has to sanction. And ultimately Krishna has to sanction. Then demigod has. So how many demigods are in charge of our, just this body and the mind? So many. It's just inconceivable. So, who is doing again? Even that demigod, the demigods are under control of Krishna. Even demigods, even they have a material body. Maybe subtle body, it's a subtle body. So that is also being under supervision of Krishna. There are also many modes of material nature. And here also modes of material nature. Can you see the complication of this machine? Such an intricate arrangement. Like a satellite, remote control. Our body is being controlled by the external agency of different demigods. So much. And there is a big, big list is given.
Okay, so Brody, the desire, I mean the free will is the soul says the free will, and the desire is like from the material
nature. Yeah, it's influenced. It is influenced by the modes of material nature. In which mode we are situated, we can get a particular kind of desire. We will be quite influenced by that. If you are in mode of goodness, then one can, you know, one has the tendency to go towards cleanliness, for instance. If somebody is influenced with passion, everything is affected by the modes of material nature which we are situated. We will see further in Bhagavad Gita. What we eat, what we drink, in which mode the knowledge comes, what are the different characteristics, what are the activities one performs, all these things are given, influenced by the modes of material. So there is
influence, of course. Free will is the
property of the soul. Yeah, it is the function. It can choose. Yes. Okay. It's pretty clear. Vijay Prabhu, things are a little clear. Further discussion will be the fifth chapter. Then we will have the analysis of the doer as a jiva, the doer as the material nature, and doer as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Three doers we will be covering in the fifth chapter. Now, one doer itself we are confused. So, actually it is confused because we were stressing on one aspect. Ideally we had to stress on the three doers, then things will be clear. The three things are involved, not just one. What is it? Not in the fifth chapter, where the karma is given towards the middle of the fifth chapter. In the fourth chapter. So one has to understand the doer, and after that, a tattvavit, if you understand who is the doer, then what he does. Tattvavit, what he does. Tattvavit means, of course, is the knowledge of truth. Any guess? It's a very important point we have to understand. Tattvavit Mahabharata, Guna Karma Mahabharata, Guna Guna Kavasandha. He doesn't engage in sense gratifications. That is the end result. If understanding, we are not the doer, and ultimately Krishna is the proprietor, and he is the doer, his influence is there in all the activities. He does not actually engage in sense gratificatory activities. Because he knows, knowing well the difference between working devotion and work for fruity life. Both are, one is entangling and the other one is liberating. So since he knows that, then he doesn't engage in sense gratification. Very important point for us. So it's not a theoretical concept. After understanding devotion, after understanding the binding by the modes of material nature, after understanding the difference between the two activities, activities under modes and activities in devotion, then we shouldn't engage in the clarification. We have to move towards Krishna consciousness. We have to take steps towards that. So that is the practical implication of understanding. It's not just understanding and then doing something else. One has to gradually come to that state of Krishna consciousness. And after describing this, actually Krishna is going to the next, that is the verse 30, which is clearly talking about bhakti. It's actually aiming at bhakti. That is, you do all these activities as a devotion to Krishna. So that's the reason, Mai Sarvani Karmani Sanyasya Adhyatma Chedasya. Mai Sarvani Karmani Sanyasya. So directly Krishna is playing the role. Krishna, give me all the results. Give me all your activities unto me. And Nirashi Dharmama Bhuta Yuchasya because of Jura. Nirashi, that is, desire for no profit, with no claim to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. So again, Krishna is urging Arjuna to fight. That is because this is Karma Yoga. Fight. Now you do your duty. But Krishna in the center. Next two verses, Krishna is saying, what is the pros and cons of following Krishna's instruction? If you follow Krishna's instruction, what happens? And if you do not follow Krishna's instruction, what happens? That is 31 and 32. So if one follows Krishna's instruction, then he becomes free from bondage of the fruitive activities, won't be there for him. And if he, of course, if he doesn't, then actually he will be befooled and ruined in their endeavor for perfection. So that is 31 and 32. So Krishna is actually teaching the positive side and the negative side. If you follow, what you get, and if you don't, what you get. So both sides Krishna is telling. This kind of statements you can see in many places in Bhagavad Gita. That is, Krishna is telling, okay, what is the positive result? And if you don't, what is the negative result? Both Krishna is discussing. And the verse, next verse is very, very interesting because it is said, even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. For everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? What can repression accomplish? Can anyone understand?
Not allowing the person to feel off. You're not allowing the person to operate in the mode of material nature that they are accustomed to, and to also solve the tasks or the duties that are assigned to them.
Yeah. Say, for instance, can we use this principle in terms of varnashram, for instance? How can we see this principle? In varnashram, say, who acts as a shudra, for instance? What mode is he influenced by? Yeah, in one sense, he is influenced by the mode of ignorance. Then, if he actually is stopping his activity, will he be able to maintain his position? Because he has a particular nature. Say somebody has a particular nature to act physically a lot. They will tell, I can't sit in front of a laptop all day. Have to, act physically. My hands should be dirty. Then I feel some satisfaction. And if you try to repress his activities, for instance, is it possible to keep him in that position for a long time? No, it doesn't work like that. Same way, even the material desires what we have, if you don't doubt it, if you try to just repress, will it work? No. So that's the reason we have the principle of higher taste, Paramdrishta Nivardhana. Because the principle is, it's not the question of repression, but developing a higher taste. Even though the living entity has taste for the material, lower taste, even though one has, and one is actually controlling his senses, still, by development of the higher taste, one can easily go beyond that. So our principle is always about the higher taste rather than repression. Because repression cannot last long. Then Krishna talks about attachment and aversions, which are both the obstacles in the path of self-realization. Both, it is very important to note that attachment and aversion. the dislike for something, or attachment and dislike. Can you understand?
Dislike, how it can be obtained?
Okay. The aversion for what we can take as an example. Anything. Say, suppose somebody is too attached to a car, a particular model of car. Can it cause a problem?
Yes.
Definitely it can cause a problem. Because first of all, if he's so attached, then he has to work very hard to get the money. One will not be attached to low class car. Obviously one will be attached to a higher class. So one has to make money to buy that car. So maybe one has to endeavor too much for that. In that way one has to sacrifice his Krishna consciousness. Even if not, one's meditation is challenged. He will not be thinking about Krishna, but he will be thinking about some car. So obviously his Krishna consciousness is affected in that way. One part. Then somebody is developing an aversion, too much of renunciation, that I have nothing to do with the car. Is that useful for him, Krishna consciousness?
No.
So if he has to go somewhere, what will happen? Then he can walk. All the way. Will it be practical all the time? No. The interesting point is, even the aversion, in that aversion, both are material. Both attachment and aversion are material. And it's just a matter of time, even the aversion can become attachment. Too much of aversion can develop into attachment. First one actually gives away things, and after some time what happens? Okay, with the full force, everything is coming back. Everything is coming back.
Creating a passion.
Exactly, it's repressing for some long time, and then it can come back to the same thing. So it is said, it is like the two sides of the same coin. Why it is two sides of the same coin? Because in both the cases, who is center? We are the center. Is Krishna is not the center. He said, I like and I dislike. I like car, I don't like car. In both the like and don't like, what is common? I is the common.
I is the first.
I is the first. That's right. So we are the first. So the aversion and attachment are based on my sense gratification. So both are stumbling blocks in self-realization, in Krishna consciousness. Whereas, when it is based on Krishna's pleasure and Krishna's dislike, both are again aversion and attachment, but that is purifying. Because the Krishna is in the center. For Krishna.
You may have the desire to buy a good car, but if your desire should be to get the car for Krishna's service.
Yeah. That's fine. If you have the means to do so. If you don't have the means, then it can be an over-endeavor. So, it is a fact. Everyone has a desire, and if it's not money, and it's an endeavor to buy, it's an over-endeavor.
So, whatever activity you do, justify the Krishna's
desire.
Not justification,
because that's what happens sometimes.
Yes.
So, we try to justify our activities.
Then you are the desire to justify.
The emoji is, if I want to do this and I'll justify it by thinking it is in Krishna's service, then it's a little bit like taking a dirty material desire, scrubbing your shoes on Krishna as a doormat, and then doing whatever you like. Sometimes that can be one emoji. It's not necessarily what you mean, but sometimes that is the person's emoji, but it's other times.
We have to be clear what we are doing. First of all, is it correct according to Shastra? Shastra means Krishna's view.
We have to check this Guru Sadhu Shastra.
Yeah, that's right. Guru Sadhu Shastra. So, we can check with the devotees, we can check with Shastra. And if one has a spiritual master, then one can check with the spiritual master. If not, at least with the devotees, one can check with and Shastra.
That is a correct thing. If we have a spiritual master, Actually, for my, I'm taking my own experience. So I'm having this table 98 to 2004 by trap. I have to walk 20 minutes from the station. Then from the station, there's no train in the morning. I'm coming to Bangladesh. So I have to be there at 5 o'clock. Then comes the temple, then walking in the story room for 8 years. I asked the Lord, and one day I said, why, if you have to decide to come to Bangladesh, buy a car, don't worry. And next week I bought a car. So, I start coming to Bangladesh. Now I have 6 cars. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the sons bought a car. 8 years, I am training my own children. So you are, I am managing this country for 8 years without a car on public transport. Now,
so probably the question is, if you keep on justifying everything for Krishna.
No, that's the point. One cannot accept without the question of justification. One should take the proper guidance from.
Yeah, proper guidance.
Follow.
If we keep on justifying, we'll develop attachment.
Yeah, the point is not justify. It's not, say, if we had to do something, we had to see whether it is really required, how it is affecting my Krishna consciousness. And what's okay, if we are doing a material activity, we can decide what are its implications on the material maintenance and at the same time on my Krishna consciousness. So to do this analysis, we need the help of Shastra, we need the help of the devotee. And if you have a guru, it's personally take care of the guru also. So we cannot ask guru for everything. Yes, it's in the sometimes. You know, can I go this special temple or that special temple? We cannot ask everything. So we have to take guidance from the devotees whom we are in touch with. So that is very important. Taking guidance is very important. So it's not just justifying, but we are actually seeing what we are doing is right or wrong. So that we can make progress. And we can correct ourselves. So we are actually placing in a situation where we are ready to correct ourselves. It's not just a question of, okay, you know, it's just, you know, we can justify what I'm doing. Then one can twist anything. That's how the speculation and twisting comes, because we can justify anything.
Justification coming at the time.
Yeah, that's another thing. Vedas actually giving permission for many things. Not necessarily devotees should follow all those things. So many material activities are being, you know, supported in Vedas. So the second chapter of how is Krishna says, Traigunya Vishya Veda, Nishtraigunya Bhavarjana. Okay, you reject Vedas. In one sense. He's saying Nishkaragunya. All the modes of material nature in which they are, you reject. Only come to the devotional service of Vedas. Not rejecting Vedas as a whole, but rejecting the materialistic aspect which are contaminated by the three modes of material nature and come to the pure Krishna consciousness. And final point, we have already discussed, that is, one should do one's duty than others. That is, we discussed that point. It's better to do one's own duty rather than going for others' duty. And now we are going to the last section. That is a word that is very, very important and relevant word. Do you know what it is?
No.
It's extremely important. And it is based on a question by Arjun. Arjun is asking question, why, what is one impelled to sinful act, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? It's a very valid question,
yes.
Isn't it? We are doing nonsense, even though we don't want to do that, and we know that it is not good sometimes. Yes, we don't want to do that, still we do. Why do we do? Okay, yeah, there's a valid point in it. So Arjun is asking this question for the benefit of all of us. All of us here, outside, everyone. Because people are acting sinfully in so many different ways, and we also do. We also know sometimes we also act sinfully in some way or other. So why do we act in such a way? What's the answer? It is lust only, Arjuna, that's what Krishna is saying. Born of the mode of
passion.
And it can be converted into? Turned into the mode of bond of contact with the mode of passion, and later transferred into wrath.
Oh,
so that's the reason we had to beware of lust and anger. And this is all devouring sinful enemy of this world. The real problem, that is lust, kama. here Prabhupada is giving a very, very nice example to compare with actual love and lust. Anyone know what's the example?
Love is only for Krishna.
Yeah, love is, yeah, that's a good point.
That's good.
Yeah. Krishnendriya Preeti is not exactly what is it's the essential principle. That is Krishnendriya Preeti is
love.
That is prema. And our own Indriya Preeti is kama. So that is the example is given. One is like iron. Which is like iron? Kama is like iron. And prema is like gold. So there is a difference between gold and iron, very clear. The same way there is difference between kama and prema. It's a huge difference.
What is Prabhupada saying?
The example
of
the difference between kama and prema. The love and lust. Usually love, we in this world we understand love means in any attraction between man or woman or whatever is generally termed as love. Or love for animal, love for people, and so many things are considered as love. But whenever Krishna is not in the center, that is not love, that is lust. Whenever is whatever activities are aimed at one's own sense gratification or others' sense gratification, gratification of other senses or our own senses or the mind, then it is lust. And when it's, sorry? And when it is aimed at satisfaction of Krishna's senses, then it is love. Because love is an essential principle that can exist between the Lord and his devotees. So whenever there is no Lord, then there is no love. If Krishna is not in the picture, then there is no love.
Love which is not aiming at the soul is lust.
Aiming at the?
Not aiming at the soul. The love which is not there for the soul, then it is lust.
Yeah, love for a soul means actually there is Krishna is there.
Mm-hmm.
Without Krishna, there is no love for a soul independent of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot say, I love the whole world, but you know, I don't believe in God. It doesn't make any sense. Because then it's just lust. Because Krishna is not in the center.
What does this mean for love for the love for the soul?
What he meant by love for the soul is if you want to help somebody, if you want to really love a soul means we have to actually love Krishna. Then we can love somebody. There is a spiritual love even among devotees, it's possible. But how it is possible, we cannot say we are not impersonal. We have a loving relationship with the devotees. Why that is existing? But that is one of the essential principles in bhakti. Why is that existing? Because Krishna is in the center. So without Krishna, that cannot exist. So love means there has to be Krishna. And the analogy given is milk in contact with the sour tamarind is converted into yogurt. So what is here in this analogy, what is the milk?
Love
for
Krishna.
Krishna. And what is the tamarind? The sour tamarind?
Material.
Exactly, the mode of passion. So when it's touched with the mode of passion, the love is converted into kama. So that is yogurt. And we cannot directly take yogurt into milk. We can get milk when it's contaminated with the sour, you know, we are getting yogurt, but we cannot directly take it back. Both are different. Milk is different from yogurt. So similarly, the kama and prema are different. Okay, we will see what is the difference very clearly, because we will be analyzing further what are the particular nature of this lust. First of all, it is said, next verse Krishna says, there are different degrees of lust. Different degrees of lust. The example given is the first one is fire.
Covered by smoke.
Covered by smoke. Okay. What does that example represent? What does that mean? A human being. In human beings, we are spirit soul. We have a covering. We have the covering of the subtle body. We have the covering of the gross body. Okay, in this scenario, when we are compared to the fire which is covered by smoke, there is one advantage if there is smoke around the fire. what is the advantage? Still we have, we can get the light and heat from
fire.
But we had to do a little bit of exercise. What is that? Just fanning. So in the same way, in the human body, when we have accepted a human body, still we have all the possibilities of developing our Krishna consciousness. Because the covering is not so thick. Okay, so that is Krishna says, Dhumena avriyate vani. So dhuma is the dhumena is the smoke. And next one is, what is the next example? Mirror covered by dust. So in when the mirror is covered by dust, can you see anything? No, the vision is completely covered. In the case of fire, even there is smoke, still there is some vision of fire. But when the mirror is completely covered by the dust, then there is no vision. And that existence is compared to
animals.
So for them, what is the scenario? Can they know about Krishna? Very difficult. Very, very difficult. And the third level of covering by the lust is? Yeah. The embryo covered by
the womb.
Means the covering is so thick. And this example is given to represent?
Trees.
So they have very low access to Krishna consciousness. They have in a much lower consciousness. So this is the example given, different coverings of lust. It means we are okay, we are separate from Krishna now. Separate, you know, we are artificially we have accepted a position where we are separated from Krishna in one sense. We are not in the spiritual world. And according to the degree we have forgotten Krishna, that is the level of lust we can. How much we remember Krishna, that much less we have lust. So in the human form, at least we have some opportunity to connect to Krishna. In the animal form, that is reduced. And in plant form, trees and plants, the covering is even more deep. The consciousness is so covered. The pure spirit soul is always thinking about Krishna, always engaged in service of Krishna. So that is completely in prema. And when the kama, when the lust comes, the human form, which is at least conducive for development of Krishna consciousness, and the other two, not at all conducive for Krishna consciousness. The consciousness is so covered. So these are different degrees of covering up. And there is a very, very, very important characteristics of this lust. It is said, very, very important, because it is never satisfying. we can never satisfy lust. What does that mean? Yeah, if we say, for instance, if we want sense gratification, say if you want any sense gratification, we can never get satisfied. It's like itching sensation. Itching is, you know, if we start itching, it's a nice sensation. Is it right? You know, if you feel like itching, if your hand or nail a little bit, if there is, start itching. Initially, it's a good feeling. But if we itch more, can we actually satisfy the itch feeling?
No,
it will never get satisfied.
Bushfire.
Huh?
Bushfire.
So there is no satisfaction for the lust. The itching we can never satisfy. The same way, if we eat nice, not talking about prasadam, if we have our lust, we are eating all the junk food. Can ever one get satisfied out of it?
No.
And eat more and more. One time hunger is finished, maybe. Sometimes the tongue will never ask you to stop. The tummy is telling stop 100 times. But the tongue will never say stop. What is it?
Sweet balls are being
acted. Yeah. Both on and on. Lest there is no satisfaction. So, the example, Krishna himself gives an example. Dushparayana analena cha. That is just like pouring fuel into the fire. We have small fire is there. Now I'll pour 1 liter of petrol in it. What will happen? The fire will increase 10-fold or 100-fold. And you pour 1 more liter of petrol or 100 liters. The fire is increasing only. So the lust is weakened. This point we had to very, very clearly understand. It is one of the very, very important points for us in our Krishna consciousness. That is, our sense gratification can never be satisfied by sense gratification. If we feed more and more, nonsense in our life, we can never get satisfied. Never. It's unsatisfying. You can take any example. If you take any material desire, if you think we can satisfy with fulfilling that, we are under illusion. We have to understand we are under illusion. We are in Maya. There is no satisfaction for sense gratification. There is no satisfaction for master. If you just by the material demands, we have different demands for the eyes. Eyes want to see so many things. Ears want to hear so many things. Many things, so many music, this music, that music. Eyes want to see so many others in a movie or this or that, or so many things, there's a big list. Then touch, the sense of touch wants to touch so many different things. In all this demand, if you try to satisfy this all the time, and if you think just by satisfying this I will be satisfied, it is not true. So Krishna says this is just pouring fuel into the fire. It will never get satisfied. So the material, can we really satisfy a material desire? No, we can try to, but it will not give you satisfaction. So this principle we have to understand. That is, we can just by fulfilling our material demands, just we cannot give satisfaction ourselves. Because the satisfaction is existing in a different plane altogether. It is in Krishna consciousness. Not just the senses being in touch with the sense objects. Mouth being in touch with the Coca-Cola, we cannot give satisfaction. By soft drink, we cannot give satisfaction.
So, how we can
even the lust also can satisfy with if you have the consciousness to that Krishna consciousness, or you have to have a higher taste.
Yes. Higher taste.
Yes.
Yes. Very interesting point. It is said in the Manusmriti that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment. Okay? Just as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel, in the material world, the center of all activities is sex. And thus, this material world is called Maithuna Agara, or the shackle of sex life. In ordinary prison house, criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord are shackled by sex life. Advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification means increasing the duration of the material existence of the living entity. Can you see that? More sense gratification means it's actually only increasing our lifespan in the material world. That's all. We can live in the material world more time. That's all. Nothing else. So this world is called Maithuna Agara. The ultimate shackle. The ultimate is sex life. That is the highest. Very strong. Therefore, this lust is a symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness, but actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. Can you see that point? Such a powerful point. Yeah, there is a sensation of happiness in sense enjoyment. People can feel, yes, we can also feel. There is that sensation, there is some enjoyment, there is some happiness. So Prabhupada says, that is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyment. Can you see? So there is that, when sense gratification, there is some enjoyment, it is not denied. That enjoyment, that is the ultimate enemy, because that will make sure that we will repeat the activity and we live in the material world. That is, suffering is guaranteed, birth after birth. See? So that is a powerful statement by Prabhupada. Very carefully read that one. Now Krishna says, which are the sitting place of lust? What are they? Mind?
Intelligence?
Senses. Actually, what is the order?
Senses.
Very important. Senses, mind and intelligence. What is the sequence, that what does the sequence show to you? Yes.
Because
yeah, progressive in what sense? Yeah.
Goes from sense, like starts off with the senses.
Yeah, it is progress. In what sense it is progress?
Sense
progressing?
Objects. Pleasure.
Eh?
Sense objects.
What is it?
Pleasure everyone experiences.
Yeah.
It is
sense
senses can be controlled by the mind, and mind can be controlled by the
mind. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. In other words, that's a very valid point. But at the same time, it is going from gross to subtle. It first is showing the gross, but there is a reason behind that. It is actually going from gross to subtle. So the senses are the gross, then the mind, which is subtler than the senses, and then intelligence is subtler than the mind. And there is a reason going in this order. We'll see that. Now, why? Sorry.
It starts with sense objects of three legs. That's gross.
Yeah, that is one level below. That's right. So, why these the sitting places are given? Because the senses has lust. What is that? Can anyone relate to when you say the sitting places of lust are these three things? Can we relate to this? Can we relate to this one? If you say, first we say, okay, the senses are one of the sitting place of the lust. What does that mean?
Because this is the point from where the lust comes out of the mind. It's already the lust point.
Lust is also
depends on the senses. The senses are things automatically the senses are attracted. So because of the due to the past conditioning and everything, it's also
the senses have its demands. Tongue has its demand. Even if you go to outside, if you go to unoffered, say if you go to nice mango or if you see something outside or some cook, maybe hopefully vegetarian food, the tongue will can say, oh, so nice, let me taste that.
So force.
Yeah? Force is there. When the senses in touch with the sense of it, oh yeah, nice, let me taste that. Is it right? Yes. Automatically the senses, oh yeah, let me, you know, the tongue is just slowly, you know, just moving.
So tongue?
Tongue wants to taste it. And the eyes want to see so many things. Correct. Ears want to hear so many things. So the senses have lust. Can you see it is how is the sitting place? The senses have its demand. Then how about the mind? If the mind is affected by lust, what is there in that mind? What do we think about that? Contemplation. Contemplation of the sense of this. We contemplate on so many things. Is it correct? Yeah, thinking, feeling, willing, everything, you know, towards the sense objects. So many things. It's difficult to display. And sometimes it can be very embarrassing to, you know, what we are thinking. If you see our mind, if you broadcast our mind, or we project our mind on the screen, then, you know, it'll be like, you know, terrible. You know, I don't want to project my mind. Yeah, it'll be a chanchalam, yeah. Just going everywhere. Oh, it's terrible. So the mind is lusty. And then finally,
intelligence.
What happens if the intelligence is lusty? What is the function of intelligence? To discriminate and to
control the senses.
Yeah, and to control the senses. And actually, if we have to do something, the mind can contemplate, mind can come up with some desires and plans, but actually to how to execute. Intelligence is required to execute things. Yes. Say, mind can say, draw a circle. That is mind is saying, draw a circle. But how to draw a circle? That is the job of the intelligence. You know, one can say, okay, maybe if it's on a board, maybe I can use just a free hand draw, or we can say a thread and you can rotate around to get a perfect circle. That is the power of the intelligence. Now, what happens if the intelligence is affected by lust?
It will affect the soul because
it's connected. Yeah, of course. But if in terms of sense gratification, what happens? If mind is coming up with a plan of sense gratification,
it executes.
Intelligence executes. That's it. Because intelligence is the person who is actually
in action.
Yeah, it's actually taking care of the action. So intelligence starts executing. Now we are under trouble.
This is a bit bewildering to us because we think we will control everything with intelligence.
Yeah, that's the reason that we are coming.
Already there, so.
Yeah,
we are helpless, unless and until.
Okay, we will come to that point. So what to do now? That's correct. If the lust is there in intelligence, then what to do? What to do?
Intelligence can stop.
No, what is the solution?
This is something
to do. Okay? What's that?
Over someone else.
We have to sharpen your intelligence so that.
Yeah, how do we sharpen our intelligence? Yeah, hearing, associating with the devotee. So what happens? Our intelligence becomes spiritualized. That is, Shastra will start speaking. Then still there is a danger. Still, if the mind is coming up with all the plan, then when the Shastra says, oh, don't do this, this is nonsense, you think about the consequences. The intelligence is saying, the Krishna conscious intelligence is saying, then we stop. And when we lose that, okay, maybe we have studied Shastra, we have uploaded everything, at least at one point, the intelligence, oh no, it's okay, intelligence is giving up, intelligence is actually fluctuating, it is moving towards lust. When it is affected by lust, then gone. That is the point you start actually acting. That is the point you start acting. So at that point, the intelligence start acting in the negative way, to satisfy the lust of the mind and the senses. So then we are out of control. So that is the worst situation. That is when the intelligence is affected. That is the worst situation. So what is the solution? Krishna says, Tasma Indriyanyadyo Niyamya Bharadashabha. Verse 41.
Yes.
In the beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses. And the destroyer of knowledge and celestial effects and jnana, vijnana, nasana. Where it is starting? Starting from regulating the senses. So it is said, it is easier to regulate something which is gross than subtle. That's the reason here it is given, first regulate the senses, it is mentioned. Got that point? Very important point. Well, if we are straight away, control the mind. It doesn't work. Control the intelligence. It doesn't work. So start from controlling the senses, following the regulatory principles, getting up, eating only prasadam. These are sensory activities, so it's easy to do. So first do the gross activity, first do the externals, then we can come to a platform where we can control the more subtler elements like the mind and the intelligence. That is a very important point we had to understand. First we have to regulate ourselves. If you want to say, for instance, if you want to have a nice chanting, can we get straight away nice chanting? No, we want, what we do, what do we have to do if you want nice chanting, if you want to improve our chanting? Yeah, of course, following regular principles. Yeah, that's part of it. But yeah, first we had to get up early in the morning and take a shower, go to the temple, take darshan, sit with the devotees and start chanting. If you see, is it internal activity or is it external activity? External. Getting up early morning, external, you know, taking a shower, going to the temple, okay, of course, that's spiritual activity. But then actually we are situated, the body is situated in a position where we can actually start controlling our mind. If we eat too much, for instance, can we control our mind? No, something like, you know, I feel like somebody is pulling me down from inside if I eat too much. You can't do proper arati also if I do eat too much. On the altar is a difficult. So it's one of the rules, if you are going to the altar, you shouldn't eat a couple of hours before. So that we can at least digest and, you know, can be in a better consciousness, because the mind can be more controlled. That is the reality. So the external thing we have to control, then we can actually start controlling the subtler elements. Is that point clear? Okay, of course, we had to understand that it is purifying. Of course, it is purifying internally, but at the same time, it has effect on our mind. Krishna said, even if it doesn't matter whether it is prasadam, if we overeat, is it good? We cannot control our mind. Will we end up sleeping? Try and eat nice gulab jamun to fill your stomach, and then start chanting. What happens? Yeah, it's a certification. What happens? Start sleeping. I had this experience. I ate one time a lot of gulab jamun and started, you know, I was on a chair like this and started chanting. After some time, the chanting bead went somewhere, and I was just, I woke up from the sleep and I was thinking the bead is gone somewhere, and, you know, yeah, it was, you know, I didn't even know, you know, I was, you know, falling asleep. No, I just gone.
No, it's about
gradual development. full unconscious, fully in samadhi. So, does prasadam has influence on us? Yes, it has. So, sixth chapter, Bhagavad Gita, yogi cannot eat too much, not too little. And if you don't eat also, what happens? Then all the time we'll be thinking about prasadam. When will I eat next prasadam? When will I eat?
When is the next
dish? Yeah.
Nirjalaikashi.
Nirjalaikashi, what happens? What is the time to break the fast? Is it 7:30 or 6:30 or 8:30? What is the time? So one should do according to one's capacity. Too much austerity is not very good. Because there is fasting and after that there is feasting. So in both ways, pretty much one is not following. Unnecessary fasting, if it is some fasting are required. Unnecessary fasting and then after that feasting. So one time one is actually abstaining from prasadam, which is required, and next time it is feasting, so over.
Imbalance,
yeah, that's right. We have to be controlled, yes.
Would Prabhupada say in the beginning of your Krishna consciousness, like we should eat after
But the problem is, we identify ourselves as beginners for one decade, two decades. If you ask a devotee who is practicing for 20 years or say, if you ask Prabhu, how are you, are you a senior devotee? No, we are just beginners. So if we do the same thing in terms of prasadam, health will show different signs, symptoms. The body will show different symptoms. So, what can you do? So initially, I suppose if somebody is too much engrossed in nonsense eating habits, maybe it's good to eat, feed nicely, so that at least I feel sometimes in crossways, if you eat nice halwa and custard lunch time, then many people somebody eats two, more than two, for sure they will sleep. More than two coffee and halwa, more than two means they're for sure they will sleep. So if it is a karmi, in the materialistic people, already, too much of sense gratification, we plan and these things are going on, and it is good, it will let them become a little dull. Anyway, they are getting purified, so we don't say, you control your time. No, we never say. But devotees who are engaged in service, we say, okay, control the time, eat regularly, but others, eat more. Becomes a little dull. Exactly.
Yeah. So we start to make people, we should make
some
prasadams. That's all I'm here for.
That's right. That's right. If you go for some Sunday feast or weekday evening, some people are coming only for prasadam. Yeah. As Prabhu was telling, if you go and tell them, don't eat, control your tongue means, then we don't come here. We are coming to eat something.
No one will be here.
No one will be here, he said. So, as practicing devotees, we have to actually control. Eventually. Yeah, but for devotees, we can see as we chant Hare Krishna, at least some control will come, isn't it? Naturally, some control will come. Otherwise, doctor will give some control. Especially in this temple, doctor will give you a prescription, your diet prescription. So, no problem. So, one or the other way, we are forced to control. Whichever reason. So.
So when I correlate all these things, I feel for controlling everything, only for the heart is there. And
yeah.
But there should be determination.
And yes.
But one needs determination.
Right.
Is that part of the determination?
My question is, so how to cultivate that determination? How to cultivate the determination? Because if determination will be there, you will wake up early in the morning. But if there is no determination, again the mind is with you where lust is sitting, intelligence is there where lust is sitting, and they will guide you, okay fine, you just take rest for another half
hour. So actually, even in determination, what's the important element that is playing? It's the mind.
Intelligence.
It's the intelligence. That's why we had to refresh our intelligence. We had to hear so many times. If people think, I have heard this philosophy so many times. But we had to be refreshed all the time. Because we have to sharpen our intelligence all the time. So we are forgetful. Why do we hear the same philosophy again and again? How many times have we heard, we are not the body, we are the spirit soul? From the beginning, day one, from the first lecture what we have heard, till now also we are, today also we heard the same point. Have you realized that? No. We haven't realized it completely. But to some degree we have realized it on that point also. But we have to be refreshed all the time, because that's how we actually sharpen our intelligence. By reading, we sharpen our intelligence. Whatever we have heard, it's actually confirmed when we read. Then the mind actually starts accepting. Intelligence becomes sharpened and the mind starts accepting. It has a profound impact actually. Reading has a profound impact on us. We may have heard many things, but actually the intelligence actually starts kicking in when we read the same thing again. When we read, okay, yes, this is what Prabhupada says. Yes, I shouldn't do this way. I should do it the proper way. I should be attentive in chanting. I should take darshan in this way. I should do devotional service in the proper way. All these things, when we read, okay, it starts hitting us. So that's actually the intelligence is getting sharpened. The reading is very important in that respect. Now it's coming to the controlling of the same thing. Then at that reason, Krishna is giving the actual hierarchy. Indriyani pararahu, indriyepyo paramanaha. That verse is coming because superior to the senses is the mind, and superior to the mind is the intelligence, and greater than the intelligence is the spirit soul. Now why this hierarchy is given? Because we have to start controlling. Okay, one side is practical ways controlling the senses. That is the regulation. But that in itself is not sufficient. We need spiritual intelligence. Means we need Shastra. So with Shastra, when we have the spiritual intelligence, Krishna conscious intelligence, then we can control the mind. And with that mind, we can control the senses. So this is the procedure. And as far as we don't have the spiritual intelligence, we cannot control any of this. Even to control the senses, we need some spiritual intelligence, if you think. Because how will we come to know that we have to control the senses? And how can we actually control the senses? And how can we follow regulatory principles or regulations in any terms without Krishna conscious understanding? Without Krishna conscious intelligence? It's not possible. So that is the primary point, the intelligence, spiritual intelligence. And that is when, as Prabhupada was pointing out, that is the intelligence is the next door neighbor to the spirit soul. Why it's mentioned? Because when the intelligence is affected by lust, then finished. Everything down. The intelligence is actually helping the mind. The senses are demanding many things, the mind is supporting it. Mind is thinking about it, feeling it and willing it. Okay, it's nice, I need that. Then the intelligence also says, okay, yes, I will facilitate everything. What happens? Then one is forced to forget about Krishna. Sense gratification means one is forgetting Krishna. Why are we against this sense gratification? Then we identify with the body, we forget Krishna. As simple as that. Whom we are meant to remember all the time. Who is the most dear to us, but we are forced to forget that. So we actually deny sense gratification. We say no sense. Any questions so far? Just controlling mind, senses, intelligence.
Intelligence is finally helping the soul to give those. Where does the soul and intelligence?
Okay. Again, the intelligence is also a covering of the soul. It's a subtle covering. The subtle covering has three aspects. The mind, the intelligence, and the false ego. So the intelligence helps the soul in the sense, when the intelligence becomes spiritual, then all the other activities, the mind, the senses, everything is engaged towards service of Krishna. And the false ego turns into true ego. What is the true ego? So that is identifying oneself to be servant of Krishna rather than the enjoyer. So in that way, the spiritual intelligence helps the spirit soul. Otherwise, the spiritual intelligence can degrade because it is actually supporting the mind to degrade as well as the senses engaged in sense gratification. Then now the concluding verse, that is, thus knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence. and thus by spiritual strength conquer the insatiable enemy known as lust. How to control the mind? Again, deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness. Krishna is making that point very, very clear. How to control the mind? So on a practical level, we have to really understand, if our senses are demanding for something, how we can control? This is a day-to-day issue, a momentary issue. Moment by moment we are actually faced with problems. The senses are demanding different things, and the mind may think about things which are not very suitable for us, which are not very conducive. Then how can we deal with the situation? This we had to think on a practical application. We had to deal with this on a regular basis. Is it correct? All the time, actually. That's the reason this is mentioned again and again. With the spiritual intelligence, with Krishna consciousness, one should see what is good for Krishna consciousness and what is not good. And in that way, one should discriminate and reject. If mind is demanding, reject. One can chant, one can distract the mind from the sense gratificatory thoughts. One can distract the mind. Just chant Hare Krishna. Or think about Krishna. Think about what you have read in Bhagavad Gita. Think about some philosophical aspect, what will cause. The job of Maya is to give the covering. When we are an illusion, we cannot see the future. The senses are demanding for sense gratification, and the mind is trying to support that by thinking and feeling. And when we are an illusion, we cannot actually see what are the consequences. So there we had to use the intelligence to see the consequences of sense gratification. Not now, it's not just now, when we are in that position. Because in the day we go through the same test so many different times. That time we had to actually see how we can use the intelligence and see the consequences of sense gratification and then stop it. So when the mind is changed, the senses will automatically be under control. When the intelligence kicks in, the mind becomes, from sense gratificatory thoughts, it goes to Krishna conscious thought, then the senses is subdued. But without that, without Krishna consciousness, there is no point of controlling the mind or the senses. So it is considered, a very important section of Bhagavad Gita. Discussion on lust is considered very important. Because this is the greatest enemy. Enemy number one. Prabhu says, Mr. Lust. I was reading a letter from Prabhu Vasudeva, how to deal with the Mr. Lust. So it is saying, be Krishna conscious, engage in devotional activities, then automatically it will go. Because it is said, it's kama, kama dev, it's cupid. Especially the attraction between man and woman is, cupid. Krishna says, Prabhu says, Krishna is known as Madan Mohan. One can actually bewilder even Madan, who is the kama dev. So Krishna is even more beautiful than kama dev. So, only through Krishna consciousness one can curb this enemy. There is no other way. Any further questions? I think we are already solved that. Two things actually, I don't think we can go to a group of things. Do we have time? If not, we will have to do that. Half an hour is not enough for any. We end up at 3:45 minutes.